It is hour number two of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. At 1:45, where are we at in society? Zay Collier will let us know. At 1:30, Longhorn Baseball is going back to Omaha. And in mere minutes, we're talking Longhorn football recruiting and a little bit of Longhorn basketball recruiting with Jerry Hamilton of Inside Texas. I'm Trey Elling. Isaiah Collier is behind the glass. Chad Hastings on vacation today and all week. In his place today, up until 2 o'clock, it is Joe Cook of Inside Texas. Thank you again, Joe, for hanging out today.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
So we're normally speaking with you at this time regardless,
right.
But much like with Justin, whenever I have Justin host with me, I'll have somebody fill in for him Wednesdays at 1 o'clock. Thought it would be good to get one of your IT buddies on today to talk recruiting, and who better to have on than the guy who is not only covering recruiting for Inside Texas, football, basketball as well, but maybe the most fiery of the IT guys in terms of dealing with the message board from time to time. It is Jerry Hamilton. Jerry, thank you as always for the time, man. How you doing today?
I'm doing great, man, and I have no idea what you're talking about.
All right, well, Jerry, let's not bury the lead here. Everybody knows that Arch Manning was in town this last weekend, made one highlight reel throw that still has Longhorn fans buzzing. Just how did things go for Steve Sarkisian and his staff with regards to trying to further recruit Arch Manning?
Yeah, I think Texas had an unbelievable weekend in general, and I think that applies to Arch Manning and the Manning family. I think he got to spend a lot of time with the current players in the program, got to spend a lot of one-on-one time with Steve Sarkisian and Coach Milwee, quarterback's coach, and with the staff and in general, a lot of the top 2022 and 2023 prospects that were on campus. Obviously, this next weekend is the bigger 2022 group, but a lot of really top 23s were on campus and some really talented 2022s. So he got a great feel for the program, was around all the players, was around and got to hear what a lot of the other prospects were saying. But just like Arch, this is a lot of those kids' first time at Texas in a while, if not ever, and the first time to meet this staff. And then you get to the city of Austin. You know, look, with the super regional in baseball, I'm sure Joe's talked about how electric that atmosphere was. That atmosphere carried over to campus and carried over to the football facility and the basketball facility. And there was a big carryover this weekend from that excitement. So it was absolutely a tremendous weekend to have football and basketball prospects in Austin.
Jerry, we posted in the Inside Scoop on Inside Texas plenty of information, not just on Arch, but on all the different recruits. But, you know, about Arch, it seems like, you know, with the Manning family, they're doing their homework. You know, this is Peyton, this is Eli, this is Cooper, this is Archie. These guys know, you know, what it takes to be successful at college football. And it sounds like Arch was doing the same thing. What were some of the indicators that, you know, allowed him to see that he had a chance to be successful or has interest in being successful at Texas?
Yeah, I think one of the big things when Justin Wells or myself or Joe, you know, you yourself, whoever, when you talk to prospects, the one thing that kept coming back on Arch was he asked great questions. He's very inquisitive. So he's not just there hanging out and having a good time, right? That's not what the family's about. That's not what he's about. He was asking really detailed questions, and many guys said that guy asked a lot of questions, and he asked the right questions, and we all learned from that a couple of questions we need to ask. So that from the football standpoint, and you know that's a prepared family. You know him and his father have sat down and say, this is what you know, what do you want to ask? This is what I think you should ask. And that's kind of how that all stuff goes. I know that happens with other prospects. I've had those conversations many times, especially at the quarterback position. So that's no different with Arch Manning. And, you know, the other interesting thing with the Mannings is how they have a lot of business interests in Austin. You know, Peyton has had a couple of business deals with Andy Roddick in recent years. So there's a lot going into this, even more than Arch's recruitment by Steve Sarkisian, the University of Texas. This is a family that knows Austin well. I mean, look, I'll take you all the way back to Eli Manning's recruitment. You know, Eli Manning, if David Cutcliffe is not hired at Ole Miss, and yes, Archie Manning had a lot to do with that, right? But if that hire doesn't take place, Eli Manning commits to Texas to Mack Brown in Texas before Chris Sims flips from Tennessee. So there's been a fondness of Texas. There's a lot of positive feelings about Texas and the Manning family, and I think that only carried over to this weekend and beyond now.
So in addition to Arch, there were some 2022 guys on campus as well, including a couple of the big offensive linemen, even a couple defensive linemen too. But with guys like Jacob Sexton and Cole Hudson, two guys, one from Deer Creek in Oklahoma, one from Frisco High up in Frisco, how did the Horns do hosting that family this past weekend? And for Hudson, you know, it's his second trip in 2 weeks, correct?
Yeah, second trip in 2 weeks. He also took a student visit, I believe, in March. So he's been on campus a lot. You know, and one of the things with Cole, I think, that's inviting for, you know, Coach Flood, Sarkisian, the staff, is, you know, he has a fondness for playing center. There aren't a lot of guys that come out and say, hey, I want to play center. So that adds to your versatility. That adds to your ceiling that you can maximize. And so I think that makes him very popular in the Texas coaching staff's eyes. And look, Texas knocked it out of the park on that one. I mean, the academic football combination there is huge. Obviously, his father played baseball at Arizona State. His mother went to Arizona. His mother actually went to the same high school as Bijan Robinson. So I'm sure the mom and Bijan got to give knuckles this weekend and talk about the same high school they attended. Because I know Cole had mentioned that to me before, that on the visit, the mom wanted to talk to Bijan. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of things going in Texas' favor on that. Cole Hudson will be at Oklahoma and A&M still, and that'll round out his official visit process. He was not going to go far from home, and that will be the same when he makes that decision. And Jacob Sexton's an interesting one. You know, Sexton's been on the he's been on the radar for a couple of years now, really good player at a young age. He actually came and trained in Dallas last spring, I believe, with a former NFL coach that happened to be there training the Brockermeyers. So I got a pretty good report on Jacob Sexton back then and how talented he was, really good in the run game. I think he'll develop in the pass, in pass pro. He's a little bit, crosses his feet a little bit. He's got a habit. He's got a knock out there in pass pro. But Texas did, you know, nothing but help themselves this weekend. He's at Oklahoma State midweek this week. It'll be very interesting to see if he schedules an official visit to Oklahoma. Oklahoma has 8 offensive linemen scheduled for official visits right now, and he's not one of them. Could he be holding the date till later and announce it? Possibly, or maybe he doesn't ever visit Oklahoma. He was at Alabama on the first week, and then Texas, and will be at Oklahoma State midweek this week. But I think Texas is in a pretty good spot with Sexton, too. And obviously for Texas fans, outside of quarterback, maybe speed at receiver. Offensive line is, you know, I don't know about Joe, but on inside Texas, that's where many of the questions and concerns come from with Texas fans. Is how is Kyle Flood, Steve Sarkisian, how are they going to maximize what they can do on offensive line recruiting and get the offensive line depth-wise and front line and second tier talent where it needs to be? And I think they are addressing those needs. They have a lot of really talented offensive linemen coming on campus, and it almost is a numbers game at this point. You just got to get 4 or 5 of them, but they've got 8 really talented kids coming on.
You just mentioned a kid making a visit up to Norman, Oklahoma. The Sooners had a decommitment happen a little bit earlier today. Jordan Hudson, what can you tell us about him, and are the Longhorns in the mix for the Sooners decommit?
Yeah, Jordan Hudson, I believe, look, this is an unbelievable class of prospects in the state of Texas. 2022 is a special class. Receiver is in position in this state is as good as I've ever seen it. When you just say big receivers, slot receivers, just vertical speed receivers, guys who can make you miss after the catch, then there's Jordan Hudson. Jordan Hudson has the best hands and ball skills in America, and it's a really good wide receiver class nationally. So what my point is, it's a big loss for Oklahoma. That's not a guy they wanted to lose. Look, Inside Texas has been reporting since late February that Jordan Hudson was a soft commitment, and he was not a solid commitment. So it seemed like it was just a matter of time. Oklahoma worked to firm that commitment up for a while, but there was just behind the scenes, and a source I've always spoken to about Jordan Hudson, it was always at the end of the conversation, as I don't think he's going to sign with Oklahoma. I don't think he's going to sign with Oklahoma. And today, that proves out it's going to be true. Jordan Hudson decommits from Oklahoma. Probably take a visit to SMU. Look, Coach Samples at SMU is a great young recruiter. They've made some inroads there. But I think this recruitment will go on a while. I think you'll see Texas get involved, Alabama get involved. Look, Jeff Banks has been recruiting Hudson for a while. I think Texas covets speed in this class. I mean, Evan Stewart, Brennan Thompson, I think are at the top of the list. But Jordan Hudson is a extremely talented football player, and I just don't see a way you don't make a really strong run at him because he's one of the elite talents in the country.
One of the other guys on the other side of the ball for defense in that 2022 class that is now uncommitted, has been a little bit uncommitted a little bit longer than Jordan Hudson has, is Beaumont Westbrook's Bryce Anderson. And it seems like that recruitment, he's been trying to find a way to get to Austin. It's been a little bit difficult, but he's still interested in the Longhorns. What's his next plans in these couple weeks?
Yeah, just before he came on, we reported Inside Texas that he was scheduled to make an unofficial visit to Austin today and tomorrow. That is not happening. Beaumont Westbrook has a new head football coach. Chuck Langston was hired down there, Westbrook graduate. So in their team kind of weight room opens up and the workouts begin this week. And Bryce wants to be there he's the leader of this team. He wants to be there to lead his team in the weight room. He is a great team guy. So they have bump that trip, that unofficial visit. He's still scheduled to go to Alabama this weekend on the 18th through 20th, where it gets a little tough from a schedule juggling standpoint with the Anderson family in Texas is what Beaumont Westbrook, they qualified for the state 7-on-7 tournament in College Station. That's June 24th through 26th. So right now the Anderson family intends to come to Austin the afternoon of 26th, spend all afternoon and evening Saturday in Austin, and then Sunday, all day Sunday in Austin before headed back to Beaumont. That we're unclear, and they're unclear if that's going to be an official or unofficial visit right now. The other thing is, right now, July 4th is Bryce Anderson's commitment date. I think there's a chance that gets pushed back so that Bryce could make that unofficial to Texas now and an official late in July when the period's live again. We'll have to see how it plays out. It's three teams. It's A&M, Texas, and Alabama. I'll be surprised if he leaves the state. I was always going to be surprised if he leaves the state. So it's a good little Jimbo Fisher versus Steve Sarkisian recruitment. And there's a lot on the line when you look at it from a Texas A&M perspective. They knocked it out of the park the first week on their official visits with all those kids that were at College Station. But if you concede that Denver Harris looks more like a Texas-Alabama battle, and Terrence Brooks, the son of Chet Brooks, who was a really good player at A&M and then in the NFL, if Terrence Brooks is leaning to Alabama or possibly Texas a second, then A&M really, really wants to win out for Bryce Anderson if you say Denver Harris is going to go another direction and then Terrence Brooks is likely to go another direction. So it's a really big recruitment for A&M. They're throwing the kitchen sink at this one, and it's going to be on the Texas staff to make all the dates work when they have to juggle the schedule around with the Anderson family.
Hey, Jerry, Texas received a bit of a surprise commitment over the weekend from 2022 athlete Anthony Jones, who plays his high school ball in Vegas. What do you think of Anthony Jones and where he fits in with Pete Kwiatkowski's defense?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a couple people close to him in Vegas that wanted him to play tight end, and they were kind of pushing Miami. I think Anthony was open to either one. I think the draw, he really likes Coach PK, outside backer. You know, he's got he's a 6'4", 6'4 and a half, 240-pound kid. He doesn't have long arms. He's not scratching his knees, right, without bending. Now, he doesn't have that type of 34-inch arms that some of those kids have, but he's really quick. He's got good initial quickness. He can really bend. He has the ability to be a rusher and turn the corner. He's a strong body kid. I think he'll be 6'4", 260, 265 pounds, so he'll be able to hold that edge too and be a factor in the run game. I think he's a quality prospect. You know, Oregon has been recruiting him at outside backer as well, and their 3-4 scheme. But I think that was a good win for Texas. I think he's a really good developmental prospect with a high ceiling.
Jerry, moving over to the hoop side of things, I don't know how much of the Super Regional you watch, but Chris Beard was a pretty popular guy there, and also during the Regional when they were walking around the dish with a few visitors. They've had a few guys in and out these past couple weeks, including some of the top guys both in the state and in the nation. What's going on in the Cooley Center with Chris Beard and his recruiting efforts trying to round out this 2021-2022 roster?
Yeah, it's hard to imagine it going better at this point from a recruiting perspective for Coach Beard and staff. And first of all, I'm sure you guys have talked about it. If it's not the top staff in college basketball, it's a top three staff. I mean, Jarence Howard's an absolute beast on social media as an assistant coach, probably the best easily the best the program's ever had in basketball from that standpoint. Coach Maligi's really talented recruiter. Chris Ogden, obviously, is big in running the program. And then Bob Donawalt is one of Rodney Terry, obviously, is a great recruiter, was at Texas prior with Coach Ogden. Bob Donawalt is considered one of the best in player development. And the reason I pointed all that out, that's what you're selling in recruiting, along with the Moody Center in the 2022 class. But look, they've built a really good roster. It's ranked in the top 15 in your way too early season polls. There's a huge official visitor on campus right now. It's Trey Mitchell, UMass transfer. He visited Florida State last week, and it looks like it's coming down to Florida State and Texas with an announcement later this week. So Texas gets the last shot at him. It's the first time any of this staff has met the kid. They didn't recruit him prior, so these are fresh relationships that have been built on Zoom calls. But Mitchell is a 6'9", 240-pound, very skilled offensive right-handed player. He shot 37.5% from three, averaged 19 points, 7 rebounds. He was first-team All-A-10. He was the A-10 rookie of the year's freshman year. He is a really talented scorer that's averaged 18.5 points combined his first 2 years, 7 rebounds. But he can also stretch the floor and really shoot the ball. He's a lot like Dylan Disu, maybe not that athletic. But they have built a really good roster, and if they can beat out Leonard Hamilton for Trey Mitchell, Texas is going to start appearing in those top 10 too early polls. Moving on to 2020, by the way, in 2021, they'd also like to add another guard to take some of the pressure off ball handling, but we'll see if they can find that, because it's got to be a fit and a role player, because there's a lot of heavy minute players already in the program for next year. Recruiting in 2022, they had 5-star power forward Kijani Wright from Windward School in Los Angeles on campus. Texas absolutely hit that one out of the park. That was the grand slam official visit. Rodney Terry has had a prior relationship with that AAU program, coaching at Texas and then Fresno State. So he has Texas in a really good spot there. Stanford and USC are your main competition. Arkansas, Michigan State, Kansas, Florida State are mentioned. But it's really going to come down to Stanford, USC, and Texas there. Business major, it is a true academic basketball recruitment. And Texas put on a show. They also had Johan Traore, a fast-rising 2022 power forward out of a prolific prep. His family actually lives in Mansfield. He was on campus unofficially yesterday, so that's a kid they're really taking a long look at. Then Arterio Morris, one of the top point guards in the country from iSchool, played at Dallas Kimball last year for anybody who went to the state tournament and watched them lose to Beaumont United. He is an explosive athlete, should be a first-round pick one day. He's beginning his official visit. Oh, his playing gets in at about 15 minutes. So he'll be beginning as his official visit with Texas. He came down with his mom today, and obviously Keontae George and Anthony Black were on campus in the last week. Football, basketball, it's moving at a hectic pace, especially for Joe Cook and I.
Jared freaking Hamilton dialed in, man. Check him out on Twitter, at HamiltonESPN. Read his work at InsideTexas.com. Jerry, thank you as always for the time.
You got it, bud. Y'all have a good one.
You as well. All right, coming up on the other side, we'll get back into that UT baseball team winning a couple games this weekend and finding their way back to Omaha. You're listening to Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Chad Hastings on vacation, Joe Cook filling in on the horn.
Shirts and Skins.
Back here on Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Chad Hastings on vacation today and all week. In his place, I have a number of different people hanging out, starting with Joe Cook today up until 2 o'clock. Coming up at 2, I'm bringing you people a chat that I had on Books on Pod. Actually, I haven't even released the episode yet, so you're getting exclusively here on the horn. The author is Ted Slingerland. His book is called Drunk. It's essentially all about how alcohol has been important in our evolution as humans. It's a fascinating conversation. Obviously, it's a complex one as well because there is such a thing as too much booze, but check it out coming up at 2.
Has alcohol been important in your evolution as a human?
devolution, which I guess failure can help with the overall evolution. So yes, the answer is yes. And it's made me much more of a social creature than I would be otherwise, Joe. I don't know if you knew this or not, but I'm not somebody who likes to talk to a whole lot of other people. That's kind of my rep around here, isn't it, Zay?
As you're on radio.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's ironic. It's ironic. And I can do it when a microphone is turned on, and I can do it elsewhere. But I'm actually an introvert in a lot of ways. And even though I can chat for long amounts of time, like, when I'm done with this show each and every day, the 3 hours that I'm having to speak, where I really don't have much of a choice but to speak, after that, I need some decompression time. And unfortunately, my family feels the brunt of that at times, where like they want to talk to me, and I'm like, you talk all you want to. I'm just not going to have a whole lot to say in return, because that energy source is drained.
You're just listening at that point.
Exactly. To run down some of the co-hosts later in the week, tomorrow it's going to be Bucky Godbolt at 12. Jeff Ward at 1, and Chris Del Conte will join me by phone for a segment at 2 o'clock. Make sure to check that out. On Wednesday, Zay Collier will be in studio with me. That's from 12 to 2, and then from 2 to 3, we're bringing back the Austin Food Roundtable with Matthew Odom of The Statesman and Jesse Cape of the Austin Chronicle. We had this conversation a year ago, but it was in the middle of COVID and nobody knew what to expect with food. Now that we're emerging from that, I think it's going to be a much more optimistic conversation.
I think Matthew Odom's a big Astros fan, if I have that right.
He is a big Astros fan, and he loves talking sports too, so I may have to squeeze a Stros question. I don't even know, how are the Stros doing this year? The Rangers suck, so I'm not really following MLB that closely, but the Astros are decent, correct?
They're pretty good. Their numbers are better than their record indicates right now. Offense is good. Record's good. I think they're second in the West. But they need to figure out the bullpen and quick.
Is Verlander a possibility to come back this year?
There has not been a single word about that. Huh. And that's a question I've kind of had lingering as well. Like, you know, Tommy John, it depends. It can be 8 months. It could be 15 months. Yeah. And I think he finally elected to have it towards the end of that 2020 season after trying to do a non-surgical treatment. There hadn't been a word. And I, you know, part of it makes me wonder, why haven't we heard? Maybe he's just rehabbing. This is the last year of his contract, I believe. And he's a guy that does want to pitch. You know, he's kind of like Tom Brady. He wants to keep pitching for as long as he can until his body says no. But there has not been a peep about Justin Verlander this year.
To your bullpen concern, if he is clear to throw and actually start to do so in a competitive manner again, but they want to limit his innings at the end of the season, maybe that's a possibility.
Maybe. But
you had a very ugly look on your face when I suggested that. Tell me why.
Well, still have some memories of him coming out of the bullpen in Boston in 2017, okay, giving up a home run. And the other thing is, and he has earned his ego. I mean, he's one of the best pitchers of this century of you know, he's going to go to the Hall of Fame.
Of our lifetimes.
Yeah, for sure. He probably doesn't want to become a reliever. He wants to go out there and strike out 14 again and win another Cy Young if he had it his way.
Yes, he does. And while there are plenty of guys on the Texas staff who want to do that and can do that on a given situation, I think everybody has played their role magnificently this year, Joe. And that was really epitomized by what we saw over the weekend at the Dish. Texas baseball about to make their 37th trip to Omaha, first since 2018, thanks to a sweep over South Florida this weekend. 4-3 on Saturday involves some heroics from Eric Kennedy after a game-tying homer was given up in the top of the ninth. He gets the game-winning double in the bottom of the ninth. And then yesterday, they didn't even leave it to chance. They end up winning that one 12-4. And that game felt in hand by the third inning.
Yeah, like I mentioned, I think after that, the Cam Williams home run, it was out. It was done. That's when people started to realize. I think it went from, like, what, 8-4 to 10-4, or maybe 9-4 to 11-4, something like that. That's when it became pretty clear. And yeah, the way that, like I mentioned earlier in the show, the bottom of the order just kept things moving. That's a sign of a really good team that, you know, you're not just relying, like South Florida was, on your top two hitters. And Drew Butcher, the guy who hit that monster home run on Saturday night to tie it, he finally got into the lineup. And so him there was basically, I put in my preview, I'm forgetting their names right now, there was just two guys that they needed to worry about. Outside of that, you know, guys may get theirs, but there weren't consistent threats up and down the Bull lineup. And it, you know, that played out over their regular season. They got hot at the very end and won the American tournament. They got hot and beat a Florida team and a Miami team and a South Alabama team to get out of Gainesville, but they just didn't have the consistency to, you know, make it to Nebraska against it, especially against a team like Texas.
Texas has one of the deepest pitching staffs, especially starting pitchers in all of college baseball. Of course, Vanderbilt is up there, and there are some other teams in that conversation as well. The third guy for Texas did not have to pitch this weekend, Pete Hansen. He did pitch the previous weekend in the regional. Is there any concern that he is going so long without having thrown a competitive inning?
I don't think so, because like I mentioned earlier when we were talking about Tristan Stevens being able to come back, these guys throw. So I wouldn't be surprised if he threw a few simulated innings or something like that to keep him in rhythm, that type of thing. I kind of had an idea that if Texas was ahead late and if things got close, they may have utilized him then to try and keep, you know, go ahead and get one of your best arms out there to try and mow those innings down. But they trusted Cole Quintanilla, got him work. They trusted Aaron Nixon, who David Pierce called Quadzilla a few weeks ago, which I think is the perfect nickname for him. His baseball pants are probably should be wearing a large, and he's out there wearing a medium. He you know, fanned a couple batters to end the game. I think as far as pitching goes, aside from Tanner Witt's struggles, everything went about as good as you wanted it to. And that was only just, you know, a couple batters. Aside from those couple of batters, Tanner Witt was pretty dominant in relief of Ty Madden on Saturday.
Where do you rank the crowd at the Dish specifically yesterday? I know that it was a full house on Saturday as well, and they were as loud as can be, but it really did seem like, watching on TV, that raucous crowd was having an effect on South Florida's psyche. Their pitchers were having problems hitting their spots, and there were just some really sloppy errors in the field at times too.
Exactly. You could tell, basically going back to the regional round, that the Texas dugout knew what an advantage it had with 7,000 people there in the stands. And even from, you know, the other thing was, and it's strange how it works this way in the regional, Texas, their clinching game, they were road teams both times. They're in their home dugout, they're in their home stadium, but they batted first. And somehow the dugout sensed, like, put the pressure on now, get noise going now, you know, cause these guys to get rattled, start throwing balls, not locate very well. And it worked to their advantage. So I think as far as where it stands and where I've seen, it's tough to put a finger on it, because I've seen some pretty poor baseball at the Dish over these past few years. There were some below average teams. There were some especially just plain bad teams, especially compared to where Texas really expects itself to be. So it's been a treat over these past couple of years to see these raucous atmospheres and to see them go crazy. It was a strong one. 72-80 is a sight to see. I think the capacity is 73-73. And they were standing room only. I think if those games were closer, it would have been a lot more intense and everything would have been going. But what, like I mentioned, once Cam Williams hit that home run, the party started. And with those 8 p.m. first pitches and happy hour pricing that Chris Del Conte, your guest, and will explain about, with all that, the crowd was ready, and they made it pretty clear that, you know, even though most people have work today, they were ready to party last night.
Considering it wasn't a blowout, and it was also a work night and a game that was going really late, but a College World Series trip was on the line, was it still pretty full at the end of that game?
Absolutely.
Excellent.
You know, you don't get to hear it very often, but I think Texas has had 110 Super Regionals now, and I can't remember how many exactly that they've hosted. But when it comes time, the crowd, all 7,000, starts chanting Omaha, Omaha. And that's something that's extremely unique. Not a lot of college baseball programs have heard that. And it was pretty cool to see. They were in it at the end of the game.
So Texas' side of the bracket is already determined. Now, two other opponents are not determined just yet. There is a game going on right now, bottom of the fourth, in Charlottesville. Virginia currently trails Dallas Baptist 2-1 Actually heading to the top of the fifth now. So Dallas Baptist, of course, the away team in this one. They are up 2-1. And tonight, Pitt's the two teams that will decide who Texas plays first in Omaha. And that would be Notre Dame at Mississippi State. Now, Mississippi State is obviously the higher seeded team at this point, but Notre Dame is one of those teams that just missed out on getting that top eight seed. Do you have a preference as somebody who has watched Texas play all year long, and I'm assuming has seen at least a little bit of Notre Dame and Mississippi State? Do you have a preference between those two teams for the Longhorns' first opponent?
You know, like I mentioned, everybody at this point is pretty darn good, and I think a lot of people may be fearful of Mississippi State just because of what happened in Arlington at the beginning of the year. Might as well be last year. That different teams, different circumstances. Although ERCOT's telling people to maybe conserve some energy this week, there's not the same weather problems that have been going on, that went on back in February. That said, Mississippi State, it's a really good SEC team. They're a top seven team, or they're the number seven team in the country for a reason. They had some dips throughout the course of SEC play, but you know, they're here in the Super Regional. They've come on pretty strong. They've got pitching. They've got a really strong pitching staff. They've got, you know, capable hitting that gets out of the park at Dudy Noble. But Notre Dame, they can match it. They may not have the same pitching depth, but their frontline pitching is really good. And they hit a ton of bombs in the regional round to get out of South Bend. And I thought they should have been a national seed. I thought that Texas and TCU should have been the two Big 12 teams in the top eight. And I think Tech got rewarded for some reason and got that number eight seed. I did not think they deserved it. And I think Stanford kind of showed them that they didn't deserve it, at least this past weekend. But if I had to pick one, I think you would want to face Notre Dame just so you can throw your best pitcher against maybe a lineup that hasn't seen something like that as consistent all year. TD Ameritrade Park is a pitcher's park. The outfield and deep right center, I believe, is one of the more expansive ones. And against a team that can hit for power and has a pretty good power hitter, and against maybe a pitcher in Ty Madden who's given up some gopher balls, let him go against that power lineup. The only problem is Tennessee's got a power lineup too. So it's pick your poison. These are supposed to be the top eight teams in the country. If I had to pick, though, I'd go Notre Dame.
He is Joe Cook of Inside Texas. He joins us for one more segment coming up. It's Where Are We At in Society. Zay will let us know here on the other side. You're listening to Shirts and Skins, minus Chad Hastings this week, here on The Horn.
Shirts and Skins.
Back here on Shirts and Skins, no Chad Hastings today or all week. That's because he's on vacation. I think he's in the Houston area somewhere for most of this week. No worries. He works hard. He deserves a little bit of a break from time to time. And because of that, I get to have some fun with some other people who are joining me in studio as co-hosts. Starting today with Joe Cook of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, at JosephCook89 on Twitter. And Joe, because it's just after 1:45, it's time for Where Are We At in Society.
Where are we at in society today?
And because I am the primary host today, I don't have time for Where Are We At in Society. That's where we're at in society, Zay, but I have a ton of confidence in what Zay does on the air, so I'm having him take over this segment this week. And with that said, Zay, where are we at in society for today?
Good looking out, Trey, and we're going to go to the Westminster Dog Show, which was in New York this past weekend, and the dog show didn't go very well for the Boston Terrier named Ripple, which, let's keep it real. Ripple, come on now. If you don't know what Ripple is, it was a old school liquor, kind of like Mad Dog 2020.
Oh, like Night
70s.
Train?
Yeah, it was very popular in the black community in the 70s.
Okay.
So, Bucky Gobble, he could tell you a little bit about Ripple tomorrow, I'm sure of it. So, at the dog show, Ripple got disqualified because her owner wiped out during Ripple's performance.
The owner fell?
Yeah, so think of little Boston Terrier Ripple running around, doing hurdles, jumping over hoops, going in those tubes. I don't know what they're called. But, yeah, the owner, who probably was a defensive lineman at one point in time, that's just how he looks, And yeah, he almost killed Ripple during this time. Yeah, Ripple is very small. And you know, your boy just got Champ. So this hurt me a little bit because Champ just graduated puppy training.
Oh, no.
And I know how rigorous training could be. And I know Ripple went through some things just to be prepared for the Westminster Dog Show.
Whoa.
Went through adversity, you know, as coaches like to say.
Oh, my gosh. Thank goodness he didn't land on that dog. That dog would be dead right now. Zay?
Yeah, Ripple would be definitely in IR right now. I don't know. Maybe out for the season.
Ruled out.
Yeah.
Not questionable, not doubtful.
And the thing is...
So wait a second. Does Ripple get...
disqualified, yes, because again, since the guy fell, Ripple was checking on its owner, and then Ripple went the wrong way because Ripple was rattled. This, why are you on the ground?
Ripple should get bonus points for that.
That's what I'm saying.
Checking on its human.
That's what I'm saying. So, yeah, where are we at in society today where we're disqualifying, penalizing the dog for the owner's mistake?
Westminster, is that the one that is in London? Or no, that's in New York City. Okay.
Yes.
So
yeah.
I was about to say, we can maybe think that that's something our brethren across the pond are dealing with instead of something that's come to our shores. But apparently, I guess if it's a Boston Terrier, they're not going to stray too far from the Northeast.
No, it's a cute-looking dog also. Very athletic for his size. Unfortunately, his owner cannot say the same thing after tripping over his own 2 feet. And screwing the dog out of his chance of winning the Westminster Dog Show.
Trained so hard for that moment, that dog.
I guarantee you this guy shed tears. He should have. I would have shed tears, too, if I'd cost my dog this opportunity.
What about Ripple?
Yeah, this is like when Chris Webber called the timeout in the 1993 NCAA Final Four.
Kind of, but I think it'd be a little bit more like Chris Webber's just dribbling the ball at the court and just trips and falls over.
Webber won.
Lets the ball go out of bounds.
Webber won, Ripple two. Not too far behind.
Though. Not too far behind.
You know what this is like? This is like J.R. Smith.
Oh,
just dribbling
yeah.
the ball out and not shooting it and having LeBron ask him what the hell he's thinking.
Yeah.
J.R.'s like, I wasn't thinking. I was high playing basketball.
Or on the Henny. We know JR loves the Hennessy.
Or maybe on the Ripple.
Or maybe on the Ripple. Absolutely.
He can afford better, though.
Yes, he can. Yes, he can. I think he has a Hennessy tattoo. I'm not even kidding about that either. All right, Zay, thank you for today's Where Are We At in Society. We are going to hit the commercial break a little bit early today because coming up on the other side, it is an hour-long conversation I have with Ted Slingerland on his new book. It's titled Drunk. And it's all about how alcohol has been important for our evolution as humans. Joe, thank you so much for hanging out with me today.
Thank you, Trey. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. All right, coming up on the other side, it's my interview on a book about why alcohol is good for us, moderately speaking, with our evolution. You're listening to Shirts and Skins. Chad Hastings on vacation. I'm Trey Elling. You're on the Horn.